Our speaker for this morning is Brother Peter Karavas, and he has chosen as his subject the period of the judges. The period of the judges. Brother Peter.
Thank you, Brother Ted. The year of Jubilee has come, the great antitypical 7,000-year day. Acts 3:21, whom the heavens must retain till the times of restitution. The Jubilee cycles and chronology, time prophecy points to 1874 as that great antitypical 7,000-year day. 6,000 years of sin, and then a 7,000-year day of restitution. And the skeleton or backbone to put all this together is chronology upon which time prophecy is built. And we're going to look at one of those periods, the period of the judges. On the period of the judges, it's not that simple at first. There appears to be two conflicting scriptures. Acts 13:20, the Apostle Paul says that the period of the judges is 450 years long, and yet 1 Kings 6:1 says the period from the Exodus to Solomon's fourth year is only 480 years. These verses appear to conflict with each other, and here's why. Let's start with our total of 480 years from the Exodus to Solomon's fourth year. That's at the top in blue font. And that's what 1 Kings 6:1 tells us. Now let's deduct 40 years for in the wilderness, 6 for the dividing of the land, 40 for Solomon's reign, 40 for David's reign, and 4 for the time. 4 years into Solomon's reign, that brings you to the fourth year where the temple was built. This brings you to only 350 years left for the period of the judges. So this is a problem because Acts 13:20 says it's 450 years. So how can we fix this problem? That's what this discourse is going to be about. Now, in 1 Kings 6:1, we see that in order to make the calculation turn out to 450 years at the bottom, we have to change 1 Kings 1 to say 580 years. But that's not what it says. It says 480 years. What does Brother Russell say? In Harvest Gleanings, Brother Russell says, leaving 350 years for the period of the judges, whereas the time as given in Judges in 19 periods makes a total of 450 years, admitting the single mistake of 480 years in 1 Kings 6:1 for 580 years in the Kings will set it right. So, it was Brother Russell's opinion that the 480 years in 1 Kings 6:1 was wrong. It was a mistake. It should be 580 years. And he gives some reasons as to how the scribes might have made errors in spelling. And we're going to go into that, so bear with us. Now, in Volume 2, Page 49, Brother Russell says, we come now to the most difficult portion of the chronology, the period from the division of the land to the anointing of Saul as king. It is usually termed the period of the judges. Though the judges did not fill the office consecutively, he says that because there were periods of oppression between some of the rules of the judges. Though the judges did not fill the office consecutively, the record given in the books of Judges and 1 Samuel mention 19 periods, approximating a total of 450 years. But they are disconnected, broken, lapped, and tangled so much that we could arrive at no definite conclusion from them and should be obliged to conclude as others have done, that nothing positive could be known on the subject were it not that the New Testament supplies the deficiency. Paul states that after God divided their land to them by lot, he gave unto them judges about or during the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. Afterwards, they desired a king, and God gave unto them Saul. Now, I'd like to clear up a little point of potential confusion. Some brethren have discussed the period of judges and had some disagreement. But I'd like to make something clear. As far as I can discern, no one is saying that Acts, the 13th chapter, is not applying 450 years to the judges. That's not the issue. There seems to be a consensus among Bible students that the 450 years applies to the judges. And one of the reasons for that is some have attempted to apply it to a prior period, and we won't get into that, but the math just doesn't work. It throws the prior period off a couple hundred years. So, but those who view that the period of the judges is not 450 years and it's actually 349, even though they acknowledge that if you add up all the periods, they add up to 450 years. Their thought is that Paul's giving us an enumeration or accounting, and if you take all these pieces and shuffle them around where there's some overlaps, you can condense them into 349 years. And so that's what the difference of opinion is. Now, Paul mentions three other periods in the Bible, and you can see them on the screen: the 40 years in the wilderness, the 40 years of Saul's reign, and the 430 years of the Exodus. In each of these cases, we accept that the period exactly is given, so it would seem consistent to us to accept the 450 years exactly as given. Now, that may not be absolute proof, but to us it sounds very reasonable. You're looking at the way Paul speaks, Paul's patterns. When Paul talks about the 430 years of Abraham to the Exodus, he's speaking about a 430-year period of time. When Paul speaks of 40 years in the wilderness and Saul's 40-year reign, which is in the exact same passage as the 450 years, he's talking about exactly 40 years in each case. Now, Dean Alford, one of the foremost Greek scholars in the 19th century, says that this is his opinion of Acts 13:20, treating the reading of this variant Greek text as an attempt at correcting the difficult chronology in our verse, and taking the words as they stand, no other sense can be given to them than that the time of the judges lasted 450 years. The dative years implies the duration of the period between these things and Samuel the prophet inclusive. So this was a respected scholar in Brother Russell's time, and this was his opinion. Some other scholars have a different opinion on it, and we acknowledge that. Let's not go there yet. Eusebius. Eusebius was a bishop in Caesarea Palestine about AD 314 to AD 340. He said that there were 530 years after Joshua, as well as 450 years, which he, Paul, the Apostle Paul, assigns to the period of the judges. Hold on here a second. Which he assigns to the period of the judges until Samuel. There must be added 40 years for Saul and another 40 years for David. This is, I'm quoting Eusebius. In the 4 years of Solomon's reign, therefore, building the temple, which makes a total of 534 years from Joshua the successor of Moses until Solomon. So Eusebius is from the 4th century. He's an early church father. And from 314 to 340 A.D. And it's his opinion that that the period of the judges was 450 years, and that if you add up some of these numbers in this calculation, it comes to 534. And we're mentioning that because this is part of the numbers we would need to add to get to the period mentioned in 1 Kings 6:1, the period from the Exodus to Solomon's fourth year. It's interesting to see what some early chronologists had to say on 1 Kings 6:1. And by the way, there are no Hebrew surviving manuscripts that date back to the early centuries of the Christian era, except for the Dead Sea Scrolls. But these are of no help in evaluating 1 Kings 6:1. So the manuscript evidence we have available for Acts, even 13, which speaks about the 450 years, even though that's the New Testament, the manuscript evidence on that is actually older. Early writers concerned with chronology make no reference to the 480 years of 1 Kings 6:1. So writers that came before Eusebius, even though they may refer to that period of time, they never make reference to 480 years in 1 Kings 6:1, as if when they were reading their Bibles, they never saw it to say 480 years in 1 Kings 6:1 or to say anything about that period of time. Yet some refer to the period of the Exodus to the fourth year of Solomon, which is identified in 1 Kings 6:1. So in other words, what we're saying is some of the early writers refer to the period described in 1 Kings 6:1 without ever referring to it or without ever mentioning 480 years. Origen quotes 1 Kings 6:1 without the words "in the 480th year." So he quotes it, but somehow he misses that part of it. Theophilus gives the same period as 566 years, yet he makes no reference to the supposed 480 years of 1 Kings 6:1. Clement observed that the majority of chronologists recorded this period between 576 and 595 years, yet he makes no reference to the supposed 480 years of 1 Kings 6:1. And Josephus identifies this period as being 594 years old. None use the reading of the common version 480 years, nor the 440 years which you find in the Septuagint Bible. It seems impossible to my mind that these early chronologists could have missed the 480 years of 1 Kings 1 had it been in the original Greek text. Let's see what some Bible scholars say on this. And it's no secret that I support the thought that the 450 years is correct, and we're going to look at some scholar evidence that supports that. Now, there's scholars that speak against it, and I'm not going to quote those here. And that may seem unfair, and I acknowledge that, but the time's limited. But I think these scholars are right. That's my opinion. Barnes' note says, though the books of Joshua, Judges, and Samuel furnish us with no exact chronology, they still supply some important chronological data. Data which seems to indicate for the interval between the Exodus and Solomon a period considerably exceeding 480 years, for the years actually set down an amount of at least 580 years. And that's how long Brother Russell thought this period of time was, 580 years. F.C. Cook, noting the text was not free from suspicion, concludes that the words in the 480th year are an interpolation into which the sacred into the sacred text, which did not prevail before the 3rd century. H.F. Clinton says, we have the authority. You know, by the way, I want to mention this in case I forget. I have a lot more material than can be covered in our hour. And some of this information gets technical, and there's probably not many of you that really would want to research this. But if there are any of you that would want to research this further, I could email you the complete text of the research that I did on that. So all the information that's missing that I'm not telling you will be would be included in that email if you're so interested. Getting back to Clinton, and my email address is on the old Ron list. He says that we have the authority then of St. Paul for 579 years. This is inconsistent with the date of the Book of Kings, which reckons the foundation of the temple in the fourth year of Solomon to be the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt. But the computation of St. Paul delivered outweighs the authority of the date, and we may agree with Jackson and Hales in rejecting it. Then Hales says, the period 480 years is itself a forgery foisted into the Hebrew text of 1 Kings 6:1. And he also says, the number in the Hebrew text, 480 years, is also spurious, and as was proved, in the review of the Jewish chronology. McClintock and Strong says, regarding chronological difficulties, the length of the interval between Joshua's death and the invasion of Chushan Rishon and the time during which Shamgar was judge is not stated. One solution questions the genuineness of the date in 1 Kings. Kennicott pronounces against it because it is omitted by Origen when quoting the rest of the verse. It is also urged that Josephus would not have reckoned 592 years for the same period if the present reading had existed at his time. So there you have some references from the scholars. By the time of Eusebius in the early 4th century, we believe this error had already crept into 1 Kings 6:1. Eusebius participated in the Council of Nicaea debate. He is known as the father of church history. I believe Eusebius helps us to understand how this error of 480 years crept into 1 Kings 6:1. Eusebius says, the Book of Kings expressly states that there were 440 or 480 years from the Exodus until Solomon. Let me clarify this point again. The reason he's mentioning 440 is in the Septuagint Bible, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it has 440 years. But at his time, the Hebrew translation, or the Hebrew text, was now saying 480 years. So Eusebius goes on to say, but if we look at the dates of each of the judges and also count separately the times of the foreign rule which are mentioned in the Book of Judges, there is a total of 600 years between Moses and Solomon. This total of 600 years is divided up as follows. And he shows how he comes up with 600 years. Eusebius and the Jewish teachers appear to make the same mistake of making the period from the Exodus to the fourth year of Solomon to be 600 years long instead of 580. They arrive at this error by adding to the 6 years of the dividing of the land another 20 or 21 for the balance of Joshua's judgeship. And you see in blue font where it says 27. So that's where they differ with Brother Russell's chronology. Eusebius and the Jewish teachers were adding to the period of the judges another 27 years, not just the 6 years for the dividing of the land, but another 20 or 21 years for the time of Joshua and the elders before they believed the period of the judges began. This is an error, since the time of Joshua's judgeship should be included in the 450 years. And we don't have time to go into that today, but it's in my notes. Notice the highlighted... Although the sum of these whole numbers actually comes out to 601 years, Eusebius arrives at 600 years, I believe because he's working with fractions of years. But anyway, so he comes out to a total of 600. Now let's go on and continue reading what Eusebius has to say. The Book of Kings clearly states that from the exodus of the children of Israel until Solomon in the building of the temple, there was a total of 440 years in the Septuagint. According to the Hebrew version, it was 480 years. The third book of Kings says, they didn't have the books divided the way we do in the King James version, so he's referring to 1 Kings 6:1. He says, 1 Kings 6:1 says, it happened in the 440th year after the Exodus out of Egypt that Solomon began to build the house of the Lord. In the Hebrew version, it says it happened in the 480th year because... Now, this is the maybe the biggest point you'll get out of this discourse, hopefully. Here's what the Hebrew teachers were saying at the time of Eusebius. Eusebius tells us how they came up with the 480 years. The Jewish teachers, by careful calculation, decided that the total came out to 480 years. They did not count separately the years in which the foreigners are said to have ruled over the people of Israel, but just counted the time that the judges ruled them, and included within this the periods of foreign dominion. And this must be how it is done, because it is the only way that the total can be made to be 480 years. So Eusebius is agreeing with them. He says, you know, if you add all this up, it comes up to 600 years. But I think that they're right. The Hebrews teachers are right in making it 480 years, because you have to take out those years of oppression. We shouldn't count those. Now, I remember reading, but I can't remember where, but I'll just remember in passing, that there were some countries like Egypt, maybe Babylon, where when there are disfavorable years, those are taken out of their chronology and not included. And we can see that in the example of the Exodus. The Egyptians, that was a very negative period, and the Egyptians have nothing about the Exodus that's easy to find in their chronology. And so the same thought here, that the Hebrew teachers are looking at, that we want to take the negative things out and focus on the years of God's favor. Eusebius goes on to say, however, if we follow the account in the Book of Kings, we will have a total of 480 years, because the 120 years during which the Hebrews were ruled by foreigners have been removed. Instead of the years of their enslavement, which have been combined with the years of their freedom into a single total, which is how the Hebrew themselves count it. So they took the 120 years and just included it in the 480 rather than adding it onto it. That is how we calculate the dates, by assuming that the times of foreign rule are included in the number of years assigned to the judges. So that's our quote from Eusebius. So how Eusebius and the Hebrew teachers arrive at the 120 years for the periods of oppression? These periods are mentioned in the Bible, the division of the land, they weren't in full control of it, then the servitudes to Mesopotamia, Moab, Jabin, Midian, etc. If you add all these up, it comes up to 120 years. So in summary, what we're saying is Eusebius counts everything up and he comes up to 600 years. And then he says, the Jews show 480 years, and here's why. They take these 120 years of oppression and deduct it out, and they come out with 480. Now, again, this is taken from, you can find Eusebius' document, it's really neat. You can find his translation of what he said on the internet. So that's where I pulled all this off of. Now here Eusebius lists everything and comes up with 480 years. Now, do you notice in blue font where he says foreigners with Othniel, the judge, 40 years? So, in other words, the years of oppression aren't being included. There was oppression before Othniel, but that's not added in. It's just sort of merged in with the 40 years of Othniel. So at the bottom, the total he comes up with is 480 years. Bringing you all the way to the fourth year of Solomon. And again, if you want to study this more carefully, I'd be glad to email or even print out my notes on this or refer you to Eusebius' website. All right. Just one more problem here. Why did the Jewish teachers in Alexandria insert the number 440 years into the Septuagint Bible instead of 480 years? Eusebius does not tell us why, but the answer now seems obvious. If in addition to the 120 years of oppressions, they deducted out the 40 years of Eli's unfaithful judgeship, they would arrive at 440 years. So in summary, we believe that the 480 years of 1 Kings 6:1 is a corruption added to the text by the Hebrew teachers to count the years from the Exodus to Solomon's fourth year, net of the 120 years of the periods of oppressions and disfavor. And now you know the rest of the story. Can we calculate 450 years from the book of the Judges? Quoting again from Brother Russell, the record given in the books of Judges and Samuel, 1 Samuel, mentioned 19 periods approximating a total of 450 years. But they are disconnected, broke, lapped, entangled so much that we could arrive at no definite conclusion from them, and should be obliged to conclude, as others have done, that nothing positive could be known on the subject were it not that the New Testament supplies the deficiency. Personally, I agree with Brother Russell that these years cannot be added up accurately with any certainty. Yet many have attempted to do so, and we would now like to take a closer look. Going back to Eusebius, Eusebius actually adds these years up. He gets them from scriptures, and he comes to 450 years. Now, Brother Morton Egger, in his 1948 study, attempted to add up the judges in periods of oppression. First, he provided the list he believed Brother Russell was referring to, the 19 periods approximating a total of 450 years. So, what you're looking at is a list provided by Brother Morton Egger. Now, Brother Morton Egger is not saying that this is how he believed we should add up the period of the judges. What he is saying is that Brother Russell referred to 19 periods that Brother Russell didn't think worked, that we could calculate the period with certainty. And Brother Morton Egger is saying, you know, Brother Russell didn't list these periods, but I think this is probably what Brother Russell was referring to. I think these are the 19 periods that Brother Russell said didn't work. So let us repeat. The list is as given, then, we can consider the... Brother Egger said, let us repeat the list as given, and then we can consider the irreconcilable scriptures referred to. Next, Brother Egger goes on to explain why this list cannot be accepted as is. He says, we can quote scriptures which prove that the list cannot be accepted as it stands. For instance, the 8 years of servitude, I have that highlighted in red, to Mesopotamia is the first period of the list. But a punishment of servitude could not follow immediately after the end of the wilderness journey when Joshua led the people into the promised land of promise. For the scripture declares, and the people served the Lord, not the king of Mesopotamia, all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders that outlived Joshua, who had seen the great works of the Lord that he did for Israel. So, Brother Egger is saying we have a problem. If we accept this list, then there's no accounting for the time. After the division of land, there was a period where there was still favor, where Joshua was judging and the elders that followed him were judging and where they died out. If we go with this count, then we're ignoring that. And Brother Egger's suggesting we cannot do that. Before the punishment, Brother Egger goes on to say, Brother Morton Egger, before the punishment of servitude because of unfaithfulness could be due, that faithful generation which served the Lord under the elders that outlived Joshua must have died out, in an unbelieving generation having taken its place on which the punishment came. And Joshua the son of Nun, he's quoting from Judges 2, 8 to 10, and Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died being 110 years old. And also that faithful generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord, nor the works which he had done for Israel. So that area highlighted in yellow, that's what followed immediately after the period of Joshua and the judges died out. So Brother Egger's point is that if we include the time of Joshua and judges before the oppression and added that to the 450 years, that 450-year period would increase. Hence, Brother Russell tells us that this list is lapped and tangled. In other words, we could have... There would have to be some sort of overlap within the period of the judges to bring it back to 450 years. Now, we just like to briefly suggest on the side, if you carefully look at Acts 13, it's pretty clear that you, and we're not going to look at that now, but just you could go back and read it later in Acts 13, 19 to 21. Paul mentions there's the division of the land. That took 6 years. Then right after that's the period of the judges, 450 years. So that must mean this period of Joshua and the elders, Joshua being a judge, is included in that 450 years. Now, Brother Egger attempts to resolve the problem by stating that Judges 4, 1 to 3 is actually referring to the 20 years of servitude to Jabin, but is not referring to that. I'm sorry, I could have had you read along with me, and I didn't. Give me a minute to get situated here. Okay, there's a servitude of Jabin. He's now talking about that. He suggests that Ehud did not actually judge for 80 years. And you'll notice that Ehud's 80 years is right above the servitude of Jabin. Let's see if I highlight that. So he suggests that Ehud did not actually judge for 80 years, as is indicated on the list, but only at the beginning of the 80 years. He indicates that during this 80 years of rest, Shamgar and Deborah also judged. Making these adjustments, Brother Edgar allows everything to fit comfortably within the 450 years while still allowing 59 years for the judgeship of Joshua and the elders. So, let's see. So he's including the 20 years of Jabin. The 20 years of Jabin should actually be the 20th year of Shamgar. And Deborah should be included there. Now, I know this may be a little confusing, but Brother Edgar's dissertation on this is available. And if you want to look at it further, you can read it. And he provides reasons for why we should do this, and it sounds reasonable to me, so I think he may be right. I'm not going to provide his reasons here, because we don't have time for that. But that's something you can research on your own. So that brings, there's the 59 years for the judgeship of Joshua and the elders. Brother Edgar actually suggests one more change, but below is the old list indicating how Brother Edgar proposed the change would impact it with the changes so far. The total still comes out to 450. All right, you can see with his changes it comes out to 450. But Samuel's judgeship has been adjusted by 1 year to fit. And with Samuel's judgeship, we really don't know from scriptures how long Samuel was. So it's sort of a plug in the 450 years. There are different opinions on what that should be. All right. I hope that wasn't too confusing. Okay, we're going to now move to the overlapping judgeships. Can two or more judges have judged at the same time? Can the judges have been over certain areas rather than the whole of Israel? Can the period of the judges be shortened to 349 years? The book of Judges indicates in chapter 11 the period from entering Canaan to the judge Jephthah was 300 years. In order to adjust the period of the judges down to 349 years, which some brethren attempt to do, the remaining seven judges would have to be compressed into nearly 50 years for the king's account to be correct. Some brethren favorably consider the following chart of overlaps, which arrives at a total of 349 years of the judges. Some view this as a solution to the 480 years of 1 Kings 6:1. And I actually view this chart as quite ingenious. It's very well put together. As you will notice from the chart, Samuel and Samson are judges at the same time. Also at the same time, Jephthah is a judge. So you have three judges consecutively. And after, along with Samuel and Samson, according to the scenario, after Jephthah, you had Ibzan and Elon consecutive with Samson and Samuel. So this means that we have three judges at the same time. What in this chart, Eli comes before several of the judges. You see where Eli is, hopefully, on the chart. But he comes before several of the judges, but we do not see him appear until after the book of Judges and the book of 1 Samuel. This new view on chronology presumes that the judges were raised up as needed by the Spirit of the Lord for, one, for special needs, and two, often in local areas. So, whereas traditionally the brethren have viewed the judges as judging the whole of Israel, this revised view suggests that, you know, maybe these judges could be, have risen up for special needs and for local areas. And so consequently, you could have one judge in one area and another judge in another area. Yet every last judge is said to have judged Israel. Okay, I'm not keeping up with my information here. But all right, here's a list of all the judges. And you'll notice in quotes, in every case, these are taken directly from Scripture. In every case, without exception, the judge is said to have judged Israel. Even if their sphere of influence may have more focus on a specific area, as is true of Samuel's yearly circuit, they were counted as being judges of all Israel, as we believe is indicated in these citations. Now, we have been unable to find any evidence of overlapping judges from early chronologists, yet this concept of overlapping judges is common thinking among modern scholars. So if you go back to the early chronologists, the early Christian chronologists back before and up to the time of Eusebius, there's no concept of overlapping judges. But modern scholars, it's a common thought. Now, McClintock and Strong's comments on this, he's referring to 1 Kings 1 and says, is generally adopted partly on account of its agreement with Egyptian chronology. Most of the systems therefore shorten the time of the judges by reckoning the dates as inclusive or contemporary. But all these combinations are arbitrary. That's McClintock and Strong's opinion. These are all arbitrary. The same may be said of Keel's scheme, which is one of those least open to objection. He makes Jephthah and the three following judges contemporary with the 40 years of the Philistine oppression. He arrives ultimately at 480 years. This is just like what some of the brethren are suggesting. So this is nothing new. There is nothing in the book of Judges to warrant the supposition that the national unity was completely broken up, so completely broken up that there were ever two independent judges ruling in different parts of Israel. Did these begin as two long contemporaneous episodes? Okay. The Philistine and Ammonite oppressions, the biggest key in the book of Judges to support a shortened chronology is the view that the Philistine 40-year oppression and the Amorite 18-year oppression, both mentioned in Judges 10:7, began as contemporaneous episodes, each affecting different periods of Israel. We feel that this is a misinterpretation of the text. It's very easy to interpret this passage to mean that the Philistine participation in crushing Israel for the first year, quote, that year, and that it was just for part of a year with the Philistines, and that only the Amorites continued to do so for 18 more years on the east side of Jordan, or just in the 18th year, as Brother Edgar suggests, which is a little bit of a different thought. So did these begin as two long contemporaneous episodes, each affecting a different portion of Israel? Were they at the same time is the question, and is that what the Scripture shows? Quoting from Rotherham, recognizes the most accurate translation of the Old Testament. And by the way, lots of translations translate it this way, but it says, so the anger of Yahweh kindled upon Israel, and they sold them into the hand of the Philistines and into the hand of the sons of Ammon. And they enfeebled and impressed the sons of Israel in that year. So both Ammon and the Philistines oppressed Israel in that year, in that first year. But now notice what it goes on to say. 18 years did they this unto the sons of Israel who were beyond the Jordan in the land of the Amorites that was in Gilead. So it was this particular phrase is referring to the Amorite oppression of 18 years. It's not referring to the Philistines. So looking at the chart, this is where the Amorite oppression falls, and it suggested that it's overlapping with the Philistine oppression. Who continued to oppress Israel after the first year? Was it the Philistine or Amorites or both? Was this in any of the Philistine territory? Judges 10:8. Again, for 18 years they oppressed all the Israelites on the east side of Jordan in Gilead in the land of the Amorites. So we think this Philistine oppression was just for part of 1 year, and it's not referring to the 40-year Philistine oppression. At the very least, this would be a disputable text. It wouldn't be a slam dunk to prove that the 18 years, that these two periods overlap. Can there be three judges at the same time? It suggested that there were three judges at the same time, like Jephthah, Samson, and Samuel. I'd like to show you a map. This is where Samuel was located, where the arrows point, where Samson and where Ibsam was located. These judges are pretty close to each other, so if the thought is that different judges were in different parts of Israel, I have a hard time harmonizing this because they seem so close to each other. These three judges. Now, it's thought that Jephthah, who was one of these judges, was in Gilead. But if you read McClintock and Strong's suggestion, he suggests it's not in Gilead, but Mizpah. And he refers to scripture which shows that Jephthah was buried in Mizpah and that his home that he went back to was in Mizpah. And Mizpah is actually here. So again, you have all these judges close to each other, and it's hard to imagine that you would have these different judges so close to each other, not in northern Israel, not in east of the Jordan, but all together in Ephraim and northern Judah. Do I have a couple of minutes? 2 minutes. Okay. 1 Samuel 7:15-17 says, "And Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. He went on a circuit from Bethel to Gilgal, etc." I'm running out of time here. But Samuel is associated with Bethel and Mizpah. But Abdon is in Ephraim. So again, you could see judges close to each other. And so we don't think that the judges overlapped each other, but the they were at different times, and that the thought of consecutively adding them up and arriving at 450 years is basically right, with a little bit of overlap. Now, the next topic we don't have time to go into, but it's in our handout. But in a nutshell, here's the problem. If you look at the genealogy of David and read this, it creates an apparent problem. That it would mean there's so few generations, it would mean to encompass the book of Judges that the average person would have had to be 142 years old when they begat a son. And then you would think that they would live on to till their son grew up. So this is an apparent problem for Brother Russell's point of view. And it suggested that it fits better into the other point of view. In the other point of view, you only had to be 108 years old when you beget a son. So maybe this is not as much of a problem, but still a problem. So what's the solution? The solution is, and I give lots of examples which we don't have time to go through now, but it's available if you're interested, where there are skipped generations in the Bible. There's examples in Genesis and Kings and other places where it's skipped. As a matter of fact, I can assure you, those in the new chronology camp do not dispute the fact that there are skipped generations. But their position is that in this particular area of the book of Judges, when we look at David's genealogy as indicated in Ruth, that in that case, there were not skipped. And really, it's crystal clear that there are skipped generations in the Bible. And we could debate back and forth that in Ruth's genealogy, there is, there isn't, there is, there isn't. And really, it's a matter of opinion. So we hope these thoughts were a blessing to the brethren. And personally, I rejoice in the chronology that Brother Russell gave us, because the times of restitution points to that great 7,000-year day, the year of Jubilee as beginning in 1874, and we see the signs of restitution, I think, all about us, that 7,000-year day has started. And the chronology helps us to verify that, and then the time prophecy, in effect, fitting so well with the chronology, helps to verify that the chronology is right. This is Brother Peter's opinion. And so I hope this is a blessing. And if you have a different opinion, I still love you. And but I'd like to meet you out back. Okay.